Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, and welcome back for another episode in my history series. Or if you're new here, welcome. Today I want to talk to you about something called the Lavender Scare, an unrelenting witch hunt by the US federal government to find and fire all homosexual people from positions in the government. This happened in 1953, so not all that long ago. You've probably heard of the Red Scare before, but not the Lavender Scare. And as the similar names would suggest, the two are intrinsically linked and are largely down to just one man, Senator Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin, a right-wing Republican. This time is often referred to as the McCarthy era or McCarthyism. To truly understand the Lavender Scare, you need to understand the Red Scare, which was essentially a widespread fear across the United States of communism. Communists were often referred to as Red or Reds due to their allegiance to the Red Soviet flag. The first wave of the Red Scare came around in 1917 following the Bolshevik Russian Revolution of that same year. People were terrified that the same thing would happen in America. It would change everything about American life as people knew it. This was a time when industrial work was one of the backbones of society, and after World War I ended, people started demanding better conditions and pay, holding strikes all across the country to get their point across. The American press portrayed these strikes as radical threats to American society and conspiracies against the government. These were apparently the first step to communism. I mean, in this time, it was considered radical to even ask for better conditions, and the Red Scare was a great opportunity for the government to strike the workers down through the press. And from there, the fear snowballed. In 1918, President Woodrow Wilson passed the Sedition Act to limit the exercise of free speech by criminalising any language that could be deemed as disloyal to the United States government. And then in the late 1910s, several states passed laws which allowed police to investigate, jail, and deport people suspected of being communist or even just left-wing. The Red Scare didn't distinguish between communism, anarchism, socialism, or social democracy. It was all considered bad and essentially treason. But then eventually the hysteria over communism began to die down. That is until the early years of the Cold War between the Soviet Union and the USA, in the years after World War II. As I mentioned in the introduction, this time of the second Red Scare is often referred to as McCarthyism, thanks to its biggest supporter and instigator, Wisconsin Republican Senator Joseph McCarthy. But this all really began before the McCarthy era. I suppose you could pinpoint a beginning to 1947, when President Truman signed an executive order to screen any federal employees for association with organisations that were deemed totalitarian, fascist, communist, or subversive. Essentially, anyone who wanted to make the government more left-wing. Then, a couple of years later, a high-level State Department official was convicted of perjury in a case of espionage, which attracted a lot of press attention. Then, in 1950, Senator McCarthy announced that the US State Department and other government agencies had been infiltrated by communist agents, despite the State Department at first denying this. But soon, other American leaders were repeatedly telling the public that they should be aware and fearful that undercover communists were infiltrating their lives, having an influence on you without even realising it. The worst thing you could possibly be in 1950s America was communist or gay. They said that communists could be lurking anywhere. It could be your child's school teacher, that artist on the beachfront, or that journalist you read every day. All of these people slowly tainting your way of thinking day by day. McCarthy created a culture of fear and suspicion across the country. Nobody quite trusted anyone, and if you disagreed, you were disloyal to your country. Once again, in this time, you could get arrested if you were considered to be too radical. And of course, the suspicion was strongest within the government itself. The biggest fear was communists penetrating the White House. McCarthy used hearsay, rumours, and intimidation to establish himself as one of the most powerful figures in American politics at this time, and he would accuse pretty much anyone who disagreed with him of being a communist or a communist sympathiser. McCarthy used his influence to mould the people in positions of power in government to people who matched his views, forcing anyone who didn't out. I don't need to spell out why this could cause some problems. It's not very democratic, is it? Even memberships of leftist groups and political parties dropped highly in this time, as being accused of being red could lead to serious consequences, as I mentioned before, including arrest. In 1951, the US Supreme Court ruled in Dennis versus the United States, saying that the free speech rights of accused communists could be restricted because their actions presented a clear and present danger to the government. This was a witch hunt. But not only was it a witch hunt for communists, they were also on high alert for homosexual people who had infiltrated the federal government, which is where we come into the Lavender Scare portion of this video. The name Lavender Scare was first dubbed by author David K. Johnson in the title of his 2004 book, The Lavender Scare, about this time in history. It's a play on words with Red Scare and the term Lavender Lads, which was used repeatedly by a centre in the 60s to refer to gay men. Homosexuals in this time were seen as a threat to national security because they were in the closet and therefore were subject to blackmail by foreign agents. They had something they were hiding and that could be used against them. This was a classic case of scapegoating. But instead of the logical solution of just decriminalising homosexuality and making an environment in which homosexual people be able to be openly themselves without fear, they were simply ostracised even further. It was thought that homosexual people were disloyal to the government. They were already perverse and clearly had a weak moral character. So why would they blink an eye at betraying their entire country if a communist agent tried to get them to spill secrets? Obviously, homosexual people had to be removed from government entirely. They were too much of a risk. This was a stance taken despite there not being a single example of a USA citizen who had spilled secrets under blackmail. Let's face it, this was simply a good excuse for bigots to remove gay men and women from government. Fear of communism was just a good cover. On February 28, 1950, McCarthy revealed that the State Department had fired 91 homosexuals from government positions as they posed security risks, which further solidified his support from the American public. The public was shocked that so many homosexuals, perverts, had managed to infiltrate the government in the first place, and there were calls for further investigation. If 91 homosexuals had managed to get in, how many more were there? and how many others had been corrupted by the evil homosexuals. This was really the beginning of a decades-long battle to remove homosexual people from the workplace. Because, of course, this didn't just affect the government. Once people saw the government removing people from jobs for the crime of being gay, regular employers had more of a reason to fire people themselves. It had very much a knock-on effect. President Truman was accused of not taking the great threat of homosexuality seriously enough. And thus, in June 1950, the Senate began an investigation into the government employment of homosexuals. The Senate report later said, "One homosexual can pollute a government office." And accusations were flying around left, right and centre. People were either fired outright or forced to resign from their positions. And some, of course, resigned because they were concerned about genuinely being found out and outed publicly. You were much more likely to find another job in another sector if you managed to subtly resign before you were accused of being gay. But even then, other sectors followed the government's lead and adopted their own discriminatory practices. McCarthy headed this whole thing, the fight against the gays, and even hired a man called Roy Cohn as chief counsel of his subcommittee looking into the communist influences on American life. Cohn regularly made headlines talking about the perversions of homosexuality, how it needed to be wiped out. He held one of the highest possible positions in this investigation, which makes it all the more ironic the rumours he was gay himself would follow him around for his entire life. In fact, some say that whilst he was never publicly out, he made no secrets of being gay around his friends. It seems fairly well known, as even a 60 Minutes segment from 1986 after his death danced around the topic, alluding to him being gay without ever actually saying it.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
And what did Roy Cohn end up dying of? AIDS related complications, of course, at age 59. It's really sad, I feel, the amount of overtly homophobic people you come across who are actually gay themselves and just self-hating. Although I do have very little sympathy for Cohn because he was complicit in ruining the lives of so many gay people. In the last few months of the Truman administration, it was reported that 425 employees were fired for alleged homosexuality. And then President Eisenhower took over, who was determined to continue the legacy of Truman, it seems. Eisenhower issued Executive Order 10450, which ordered all federal agencies and government contractors to fire anyone who met any of the following criteria: any criminal, infamous, dishonest, immoral, or notoriously disgraceful conduct, habitual use of intoxicants to excess, drug addiction, and sexual perversion. This was all done under the guise of strengthening security procedures. Remember that homosexuals were a big threat to national security. If people before this were being fired for being gay, it was now law. You had a target on your back and they were going to find you. Every single employee became subject to a full field investigation. You might think that this isn't too bad, this was only for government jobs and not many people work in government anyway. But at this time, the US government was the country's largest employer, so this was huge. Agencies set up new procedures for detecting gay men and women. They were on high alert for any subtle signs of homosexuality, and people were trained to spot them. If you were a straight but slightly feminine man, no chance. A more butch woman than the norm, nope. Any form of non-conformity when it came to your gender was a huge sign of homosexuality, and this was a time in which sexuality and gender were conflated into one. A huge warning sign to investigators was even if you were found to have gay or lesbian friends or family members, it was guilt by association and you could lose your job. And they would find out if you had gay or lesbian friends or family. These investigations were incredibly invasive and looked at every aspect of your life. People were placed under surveillance to determine whether they associated with known homosexuals or attended gay bars or were just a little too close with same-sex friends. If you received a lot of calls from somebody of the same sex, that was suspicious. Local police were also encouraged to clamp down harder on known gay meeting places and note down who was found there, and this emboldened the police to be even harsher with homosexuals. Of course, this caused the already underground gay communities to disband or quieten down significantly. The small ounce of togetherness the community had was entirely destroyed. And this didn't just affect gay people working within the government, it seeped into every aspect of American life. Investigators would turn up in your personal life and interview friends, neighbours, co-workers, family, and if they had reason to believe you were gay, you'd be called into the office for a formal interview where they would interrogate you about your sex life. The first question they'd ask was usually, "The Civil Service Commission has information that you are a homosexual. What comment do you care to make about this?" The only way of establishing your innocence was through a polygraph test, a lie detector test. But we all know that even today, those are not reliable tests. The pressure was intense. Even straight people got wrongly accused and removed from their jobs. So imagine how stressful this would be if you were actually gay. It drove multiple people to commit suicide, with them seeing no way out of the situation. Life was never going to be easy if you were homosexual. You couldn't trust anyone. But as so often happens when the gay community is oppressed, they slowly began to fight back, unwilling to accept how they were being treated. Whilst many people cite Stonewall as being the beginning of the gay rights movement, it wasn't. Stonewall was simply when people started paying more attention. The fight for gay rights had actually already been ongoing for decades. Some people say that this, the Lavender Scare, was truly the beginning of the gay rights movement as we know it today, starting with a man called Frank Kameny, who was fired from his job in 1957. By 1957, the hunt for communists, the Red Scare, had pretty much died down into nothing. This was actually the same year that McCarthy had died of liver failure, and without his constant influence, people just weren't as concerned about communism anymore. But the persecution of gay people would continue for decades after. It's still something that has a lasting effect today. Dr. Frank Kameny is often considered one of the most significant figures in the gay rights movement. Born in Queens, New York in 1925, he enrolled at Queens College at age just 15 to study physics. After World War II, he went to Harvard and obtained a doctorate in astronomy.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In 1957, he accepted a job as an astronomer with the Army Map Service, but was fired just months later when the executive order came into place. Whereas so many people just accepted their fates, tried to get on with their lives and get back into the closet, Frank refused and actually ended up suing the federal government, saying that this was a question of civil rights. His name and face was associated with this court case. He didn't shy away, he didn't hide. He was an out and proud gay man in a time when no one was out and proud, not to the level that he was. It was dangerous. He argued that to discriminate against somebody because of their sexual orientation was a violation of their civil rights, that there was no connection between people's off-duty conduct and their ability to do their jobs well. He lost twice in federal court, and his subsequent appeal was refused by the Supreme Court. It was the first of its kind, but Frank refused to give up. He became a full-time gay rights activist and campaigner, as he was now completely unable to get a job in his chosen field. As a result, he struggled for money and lived in poverty, but he refused to back down. He believed fully that gay was good, and he rejected the general train of thought that homosexuality was a mental illness, and he refused to believe that he was inferior to anyone else because of his sexuality. He organised one of the country's first advocacy groups for gay rights, the Mattachine Society of Washington DC, and took part in some of the earliest ever public protests by gays and lesbians, including a picket line at the White House in 1965. He would soon go on to protest at the United Nations, the Pentagon, the US Civil Service Commission, and Philadelphia's Independence Hall. In 1963, he launched a campaign to overturn DC's sodomy laws, a law that finally passed 30 years later in 1993, and he personally drafted the bill. In 1971, he attempted to run for Congress, the first ever openly gay candidate, but obviously he didn't get elected. So the following year, he turns his attention to the American Psychiatric Association. Alongside another activist, Barbara Gittings, he successfully challenged their classification of homosexuality as a mental disorder, and the following year, they removed it from the DSM. He got homosexuality removed as a mental illness. And then in 1975, the Civil Service Commission finally reversed its ban on LGBTQ employees, 18 years after it had gone into effect and 18 years after Frank originally lost his job because of it. But of course, his activism didn't end there. He continued fighting through to the end of his life. In 2009, he finally received a formal apology from the US government for his dismissal. In 2010, he was seated in the front row as Obama signed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That same year in Washington DC, they named a stretch of 17th Street after him, Frank Kameny Way, in his honour. In 2011, on October 11th, he died aged 86. It was National Coming Out Day. I might do a full video about Frank one day because his life was incredible. As I said, the Civil Service Commission ended their policy in 1975, thanks to the demands of activists like Frank. But jobs which required security clearances like the NSA and FBI continued to discriminate for another couple of decades until Bill Clinton finally signed in two executive orders in 1995. Banning discrimination based on sexuality in the workplace and in the granting of security clearances. In 1998, that such discrimination was also banned in government employment. And whilst Frank was one of the key figures in this story, he's not the only person worthy of being remembered. Thousands of people lost their jobs, their livelihoods, their security because of McCarthyism and the Lavender Scare. Some of them lost their lives. Just because they weren't in a position to put their faces and names on the forefront of the battle doesn't mean they're any less worthy of recognition. Even decades later, these people were bitter and angry about what happened to them, as you would be. They never received any personal apologies. They moved on, of course, but the shame over losing everything over something you have no control over is something you'll never really get over. In 2015, the Secretary of State, John Kerry, apologised to the LGBT community on behalf of the federal government, saying, "I apologise to those who were impacted by the practices of the past and reaffirm the department's steadfast commitment to diversity and inclusion for all our employees, including members of the LGBTI community." I wish I could say that the general train of thought that led to the Lavender Scare is now a thing of the past, but the reality is, it's not. Only recently was the first ever openly gay cabinet member announced. Pete Buttigieg was Biden's pick for the Secretary of Transportation. The first ever openly gay cabinet member only in 2021. One of the most long-lasting after effects of the Lavender Scare was that it forced every queer member out of government, meaning there was no queer influence left to be like, maybe it is okay, maybe queerness isn't going to destroy the country. What happened is that the government just became a conservative and homogenous culture which it still hasn't entirely got past. Imagine how different the country and the Western world as a whole could be today if queers hadn't been forced out of the government 60 years ago. Maybe gay rights would have come around much quicker, maybe the attitude towards gay communities would be much more accepting. For decades, gay people didn't even bother applying for federal jobs, and if they did so, they stayed quiet, they scaled down their ambitions for fear of getting caught. The amount of wasted potential there blows my mind. In just 2017, the Trump administration announced its ban on transgender people serving in the military, denying them the ability to enlist and subjecting trans people already enlisted to discharge. By enacting such a ban, the government sends a message to the country as a whole and arguably the world, with America being the superpower that it is. If transgender people aren't able to serve in the military, how can they serve in any other position? If the government can discriminate, why can't I? This does the same thing as the Lavender Scare, it demonises a whole community. We can't ever rewrite history or correct it, but we can ensure that it doesn't happen again by standing up against things like this when we see it happening. Frank Kameny proved that activism worked. So the next time you hear about the Red Scare or the communism fears of the 50s, you'll know how this was intrinsically linked with queerness and nonconformity. If somebody asked you if you were a communist, there was an underlying question there. Are you queer? It was considered to be one and the same. Long after the fears around communism died down, the fears around homosexuality did not. Strangely enough, very few communists were ever uncovered as working in government positions and were removed. Thousands of gay people were. Although, if you're looking for a small silver lining, the communists that were removed were subject to huge trials and publicity. The gays were at least quietly removed, so at least there's that. But this did mean that nobody ever really knew it was happening. It's not something that you learn or even hear about today. I mean, hands up who had never even heard about the Lambda Scare before this video. It's a forgotten but incredibly important piece of history. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I will see you in the next one. Bye, guys.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.